The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 286. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. It's good. Another week. Feels like that the spring is just soaring through. Spring training is coming to an end soon. I know not technically that soon, but it feels like we've been flying through and we're almost to the regular season. So I'm pretty excited for that.
I am too, with the slight asterisk of having my most rostered player now be on an 80 game suspension. That's no fun. And that was tough. Never good to see a young player like that get popped for whatever the heck it was. I can never say those words anyway, but 80 game suspension. But when it's literally your most rostered player across redraft and dynasty, that was a big blow. But you know, hopefully it's just a minor speed bump in his career and he can come back midseason and keep on going with his rise up towards potential stardom. But we're talking pitchers today, not hitters. We're doing part two of our guys series here, going over our 12 favorite pitcher targets right now across various formats, six from each of us. But before we get into that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris at RotoClegg. I'm at EricRoz04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com for more work from each of us. And of course, check out all the great stuff going on over at RotoBaller. Use that code TOOLSHED to get you 10% off any premium package. A lot of great stuff from content to tools to help you succeed this season. So go check that out over at rotoballer.com. All right, Chris, why don't you kick us off here with your first name?
All right, so this is a weird one, but I'm going to start with Chris Sale. No homerism here, but I am excited to see what Chris Sale can do in 2024, especially he's got off to a pretty good start this spring, and I know that his last start was a little bit rocky per se against the Orioles, but that's a really good team, by the way, and they played really good. I thought he still had a fine outing. He did give up three earned in 3 2/3, but there were some encouraging things to take away from Chris Sale's outing, and otherwise, he's been really good in his first two starts the year prior. Ultimately, it comes down to stuff. Like, Chris Sale's stuff has still been there. And even in the start yesterday, where he was hit around a little bit more than we wanted to see, the stuff was still there. The velocity was still there. He's back up sitting 95 plus consistently. His sweeper looks really good, which is a major encouraging sign to me. And he's throwing strikes. He's got to stay healthy, obviously. And I think that's still the biggest question mark is, can Chris Sale stay healthy for a full season? And the answer is probably no to that, if I had to guess. But I don't think you need him to stay healthy for a full season where he is being drafted, where he's going. I know he's moved up a little bit, but in redraft leagues, he is going deep enough where you can take him. And I think there's still a solid potential for return investment, even if he throws 140 innings, which, you know, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility to say that Chris Sale can't get to 140. He went over 100 last year for the first time since 2019. So that's obviously a major step and a major concern in some sense of, okay, like this guy, it had been how long since he had gone over 100 innings? In another sense, I'm looking at it and saying, all right, this dude has thrown a lot of career innings. He really hasn't thrown a lot of innings over the last several years, which in a way, maybe the back half of his 30s would actually be pretty good. And we've seen guys be able to do that, revitalize their career. I think Justin Verlander, obviously he was elite for a long time. But Verlander took it up a notch in his later 30s. And I look at Chris Sale and I say, like, why can't he do this? And I personally just believe that Sale could be in for a really solid year. We saw good bat missing stuff last year with him when he was on the mound. He was, you know, much improved in that second half last year. So when I look at Sale, I think he's a value and I'm scooping him where I can because I do think the value is going to, I think it's going to shoot up. I wouldn't be shocked if he goes like near top 100s by main events. Right now, there's still some potential value to be had with Chris Sale and somebody that I like a lot. And I think it's a good shot to take at a pretty reasonable cost, in my opinion.
And someone recently hinted that maybe the Red Sox are in another curse right now, a curse of Mookie Betts, because everything's just gone wrong ever since we traded him. And this just add to it. If Chris Sale is like healthy again, and now Vaughn Grissom's already hurt on our end. It's, of course, we get the guy that's hurt now, and we thought that'd be Chris Sale. But, yeah, the stuff's still there. And just watch him pitch 150 innings this year. Just watch it. Just, it's going to happen. I'm, like, fully buying into that. So good pick there. I will go to current Red Sox and Cutter Crawford. Was really impressive this spring. Only one run allowed in 8 innings. Fastball velo's up a little bit over the last year. Last year, the hardest pitch he threw, he hit 97 on the dot, 97.0, 3 times, twice on his April 28th start against Cleveland, and once against Toronto in his very next start on May 3rd. This year, he's already, I think it was 97.7 he hit, and fastball's up a little bit, very encouraging there. And the stats is across the board for him. You know, he pitched very well last year. You know, surface ERA was 4.04. 111 whip, though, is pretty solid. xERA was 3.25, which is very good. And he had a 6.8% walk rate and a 25.6% strikeout rate. Yeah, nothing blows you away with Cutter Crawford, but he just has really good metrics across the board, better than league average contact rates allowed, better than league average whiff and chase rates as well. And I just don't think the perceived value is really caught up to where it probably should be in both redraft or dynasty. His redraft ADP is like 250 plus. Dynasty perceived value isn't that high either. And yeah, he's not going to be all of a sudden like a top 25 arm, but I absolutely think he could be like a top 50 arm, like a back end top 50 arm in that range. A guy can give you a low to mid 3 ERA and probably 25, 26% K rate. He could be similar value to like Jose Barrios long term. And I obviously think you can get him for much less than that via trade right now or in your drafts this year. So I like Cutter Crawford a lot, only 27 years old still. You know, a lot of reports of Red Sox camp have been very positive about him. They all think he's taking that next step this year. And that's why they didn't include him in like that back end number five battle back before Giolito got hurt. And like he's in the rotation. They're very confident about him in Boston, as am I. So yeah, Cutter Crawford is one of my favorite targets this year, both for redraft and dynasty. All right, Chris, who's your next name here?
All right, so I'm going with Bryce Miller. I'm really intrigued by this new splitter that he has. It has some pretty absurd pitch metrics on it. And I think it has the potential to be one of the better splitters in baseball. Yeah, the performance is interesting. I don't really think it's all that relevant. He's only thrown four innings so far this spring. It's a mixed bag of results. Take it for what it is. He's allowed two home runs in four innings. I don't really care all that much. I'm more worried about his development and him working to develop and sequence these new pitches. Fastball, excellent pitch. I think you argue it's like a 70 grade pitch, very good. Mid 90s fastball, high ride. He's got the slider that's really solid. And with the splitter, I think that there's a chance here that Bryce Miller moves up boards pretty significantly. And I still think he's being quite undervalued, actually. I look at it and his cost hasn't moved up. Like I figured with the hype around a new pitch that his ADP would be moving up pretty significantly, but he actually hasn't, which is interesting to me. So I think that there's still a chance that Bryce Miller is still a really good value. And I find myself taking him quite often, like, because he's still sitting out there like pretty late. I'm gonna pull up his ADP from February 1st on just because I'm curious to see where he's been going. I know I've been getting some good values on him. He is going, still 183. That to me is a good price. You look at the other arms around him over the span, Hunter Brown, Christian Javier, Walker Buehler, Yu Darvish, those type guys. I'm really confident in a young Bryce Miller taking a step forward. So I'm pretty intrigued by this profile. I think that it's one that has potential to be a top 25 type starting pitcher. Threw 131 innings last year in the majors. I know the strikeouts weren't quite what we wanted. The ERA was a little bit higher than we wanted as well. But you look at everything else and it says, okay, I think there's a potential here for more bat missing and for him to take that step forward. He's in an exceptionally good pitcher's park. So I'm taking a lot of Bryce Miller this year and I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he's being valued close to Logan Gilbert this time next year. I still think Gilbert's a higher upside, but I don't think Miller's that far off, to be honest with you. So my next guy is Taj Bradley from Tampa Bay Rays. He had a very disappointing season on the surface last year in 104 and two-thirds innings, 5.59 ERA, 1.39 whip, but he pitched a lot better than that. There was really one main issue with him, which I'll get to here in a second, but let's look at his numbers compared to other rookie arms last year. I'm just going with rookie starters. He had the third highest K minus walk rate behind Ryan Pepiot and Yuri Perez. He was at 19.6% last year. And look at his XFIP and Sierra, both which were 383 and 382 respectively. Both were lower than Yuri Perez's marks in those two categories. But yet Yuri had an ERA about nearly 2.5 runs lower. I'm not saying he's as good as Yuri, so don't start going that route. But Bradley did pitch a lot better than those surface stats would indicate. But the real main issue with him was allowing way too much hard contact. He left a four-seamer over the heart. Four-seam and the cutter were really the two issues here. His curveball and his split change were both very good. Both had a batting average against under 200. He missed bats over 40% of the time with that split change. And the curveball was pretty solid as well. Didn't get a ton of whiffs with it, but still didn't give up a lot of hard contact with it either. But the four-seamer and the cutter were the issues there. Both had a slug allowed over 550. That needs to change right there. You look at the heat map on both. Four-seamer and cutter were just left over the heart of the plate too often. Good velocity on those pitches, though. 96.1 on the four-seamer. He's at 88.9 with the cutter. Splitter's in that same range as well for velo. So really, it's a command issue right now. Not really a walk issue. 8.5% walk rate is right around league average. Fine with that. But if he starts locating that fastball and cutter more. And he's already throwing a harder cutter this year. So looking like he's making some adjustments there with the pitch mix, and we'll see if that pans out long term. But still very high on Bradley. And I think he's a great value in redraft and a great buy in dynasty leagues right now, because the perceived value has dropped a decent amount given that 5.59 surface ERA. But again, he pitched better than that. So I'm going and trying to get Bradley wherever I can right now.
Yeah, it's a good one. I like that pick. I'm going to your Red Sox. They'll take Breon Bello, who, in my opinion, is still being a bit overlooked. Obviously, the Red Sox are very confident in him. They gave him a long-term extension. Looks like he's probably going to be the opening day starting pitcher for them. And while the results have been a mixed bag to this point in his career, he threw 157 innings last year, which is encouraging. Most projection systems don't even think he'll get to 150 this year, which is bizarre. 157, I think that could step forward to 180 pretty easily this year, which would be huge. You look, the whip was a little high at 134. Okay, I got it. I'm good. I think that could come down a little bit. Wouldn't be shocked at all. The ground ball rate is one of the best among all pitchers in baseball. And then I look at the pitch mix and I say, okay, I just look at this and I think that there's really some tweaks that can be made and he has made that could allow him to take that step forward as a starting pitcher. You look last year and started with using the sinker a little bit less, but then to end the year, he really upped the usage of the slider and the four seam and threw the sinker less. Now, I don't really know if I love the four seam usage being higher, but he upped the changeup usage midseason and kind of held it. So he was tinkering a little bit with the arsenal and the sequencing, at least. I think the arsenal, it comps not that far off from Luis Castillo from a standpoint of, you know, fastball, changeup, slider type that are all pretty good pitches, in my opinion. And when I look at Bello and the tweaks and the changes that he made down the stretch last year, I look and I question, why can't these stick? And I firmly believe that they could stick. I think there's confidence now. Like, all right, you got your extension. The Red Sox are confident in you. And then you say, okay, if they put him as the opening day starter, then it shows they're very confident in him as a starting pitcher. This changeup is really good. It had a 39% whiff rate on it last year. Incredible stuff. I think the slider's a really good pitch too, and he introduced the cutter a little bit later in the season. So I'm curious if that cutter sticks, because it is a similar thing where the changeup and slider are in the same velocity band, and the cutter is nice dead in between the fastball and then both of those off-speed pitches. So I think that addition of the cutter could be a good use for Breon Bello as well. So that being said, the cost on him is really good. He's still going like 225 regularly. It's around guys that have a lot of uncertainty, I mean, like Tristan McKenzie. Can he stay healthy? Charlie Morton, he's over the hill. How long will he last? Yusei Kikuchi, nah, I just don't want to deal with that. Christopher Sanchez, eh. Like, Bayo's like an easy smash there at that price. So when I look at this profile, I think there's potential for him to take a step forward with strikeouts. He's 24 years old. There's no reason to think that he does not improve, especially somebody that, well, he's been working with Pedro Martinez a lot of his career. Yeah, I think that the steps will be progressively good moving forward, and that we're looking at a potential really solid starting pitcher. And you don't really need him to do a whole lot more than he did last year to return value at the cost, pending that the innings go up. So I think that he's the perfect upside play. And if the downside, or if he just does what he does last year with more innings, then he gives you values. Yeah, I think that Breon Bello is a really great acquisition target in dynasty and in redraft leagues.
Yeah, if he gives you what he did last year, it's pretty probably neutral value. You're not going to gain anything. You won't lose anything. But yeah, so if he takes that step forward, like he absolutely can do, positive value easily there. And see how much of a step forward he takes. I still like Breon Bello a good amount. Working with Pedro can never hurt. Obviously, maybe it doesn't help, but it's a good place to start. Going with one of the all-time greats. Yeah, so I like Bello a lot as well. I'm going with a guy that's probably going to miss beginning of the season, but shouldn't be out too long. And maybe he doesn't. He just got back onto the mound and spring action the other day, and that's Nick Lodolo. I still have a lot of faith in Nick Lodolo. He's coming back from that leg injury that limited him to just 7 starts last year, and he had a 6.29 ERA in those 7 starts. But if you look at what he's done over the totality of his career, he had 19 starts in 2022, overall 26 starts, 137 and two-thirds innings. If you sort on Fangraphs for pitchers that have at least 130 innings over the last 2 years combined, and there are 156 of them, you know, just the starters, to take out the relievers, Lodolo has tied for the 14th best K-minus walk rate with Shane McClanahan at 21.3%. Surface ERA is 431 overall, but XFIP 357, Sierra 333. I like Nick Lodolo a lot. I think he has what it takes to succeed in Great American Ballpark. He's always been a guy that gets a pretty solid ground ball rate, right around 46-47% in both years so far. Doesn't give up a lot of fly balls, which obviously is key in that ballpark. He did give up a lot of barrels last year, but luckily most of those didn't leave the park. So that's like the one issue there, limiting the hard contact a little bit better. But you know, he did better than that in 2022 in terms of quality of contact allowed. And I think the price tag on Lodolo has dropped way too far. Look at what he did last year plus the injury. I think that's caused his price tag to drop considerably in both redraft and dynasty. And redraft ADP is post 200. Dynasty value has plummeted as well. And Hunter Green's the buzzier name. I get it. But I still think Lodolo is going to be a better arm long term. I think he's a better pitcher. And we'll see how Hunter Green's new pitches work for him. Curveball and the splitter he's working on. We'll see. But you know, Nick Lodolo already has a deeper pitch mix. He's a 4-pitch guy, 4-seam curveball, changeup, and sinker. The curveball has always missed bats at a very high clip, 45%+ in both years. He can limit walks fairly well as well. So a lot to like here with Lodolo. And I think the price tag is just so cheap right now that he's a low risk and potentially high reward player to target right now. So Lodolo is my third guy. We're halfway through. Chris, who you got as your fourth guy?
I just drafted Lodolo past pick 300 in a draft. Oh, wow. Draft. So I'm very thrilled about that. I think that's just insanely good value, honestly. I think that he pitched today 2 innings. Like, that's encouraging. His biggest hindrance is just health. So yep. If he's healthy, then I'm intrigued. But I'm also intrigued by this guy, and it's Reese Olson, who, yeah, I feel like I just undervalued for too long. Olson, I think, is going to get a chance to pitch regularly in this rotation. In Detroit, it's a little bit crowded, but this, you go through the names, like, these guys just can't stay healthy, or they really haven't performed. But yeah, I'm pretty intrigued by just grabbing Olson pretty much anywhere I can. Now, the results have been his first spring training start. He was only 1 2/3 inning with 2 earned runs and 3 walks. But since then, he's not walked a batter. He's at 7 strikeouts in 5 innings, just 2 earned. But I think the stuff with Reese Olson is what makes him so intriguing to me. I don't think I realized like how good some of the stuff was until you look under the hood a little bit. The slider, he leads the way with it. It's a really good pitch. I had a 40% whiff rate last year, which is pretty impressive. He threw 5 pitches last year, and it was more of a true 4-pitch arsenal because he really threw the sinker just to right-handed batters. But ultimately, you look, and the curveball, really good, 31% whiff rate on that. It was his least used pitch, but changeup, 36% whiff rate on it. And really, it's just the fastballs. There's a 4-seam and a sinker, and those were the ones that didn't really miss bats. They got hit around hard a bit. The sinker had a 270 batting average against and 91-mile-an-hour average exit velocity. So there's some damage done when contact was made against the fastballs, but I do love that he leads with the slider. I think that's huge. And I think just fastball location is really the biggest thing with him. If he can locate the fastball a little bit better, there's a chance for him to really take a step forward. I'm talking about a guy in Reese Olson that threw over 100 innings last year in the majors, just a 24-year-old, and he had a sub-4 ERA. He had a really low whip at 1.12, which is pretty encouraging at that draft cost. And I just feel like there's room for more here. I think that Olsen is just somebody to look at and target at pick 300. Really good value. So I'm really in on Reese Olsen.
Yeah, there's no way that Detroit pitching staff stays healthy and productive. You also have Trick Schoolball. A lot of questions there, both their ability and production. And I have no faith in Jack Flaherty. Kenta Maeda can't stay healthy. Yeah, so that's a great pick as well. I think Reese Olsen's a very sneaky target this year. I'm going with a guy here that I didn't think I would include in a podcast like this, but I'm going AJ Puck. And I've been very vocal about my general concerns about him transitioning back to the rotation. He's got, back when he was one of the top pitching prospects in the game, kind of always thought, all right, there's a lot of reliever risk here, and then boom, he goes to the bullpen. But over the last couple of years, he's been very good in the bullpen. A lot of red on his Savant page. And when they initially announced about, what was it, like late January, whatever it was, that they were going to try to transition him back into the rotation, I was like, yeah, okay. They already had a lot of options, and I wasn't really sold on him as a starter anyway. But now that Eber Cabrera is hurt, we'll see how long he's out. Plus, Puck was already trending as a starter anyway, so I feel like he is locked into this rotation, at least to start the season. And he's looked really good so far this spring. 8 1/3, scoreless, 15 Ks. He led in strikeouts until someone passed him today. I can't remember who it was, but he was leading in strikeouts for spring training as of yesterday. He does have 4 walks, and probably is going to be a guy that may have a little bit of a higher walk rate. But then again, he dropped that walk rate to 5.5% last year, lower than I ever thought he would get. So maybe it won't be too bad. Probably ticks back up to like 8%, but I don't think we're looking at a guy that's going to be 12%+ and have it be so detrimental to his value that it really hurts him. And the fact that he can obviously miss bats at a very high clip, 32% last year, and that sweeper is a big out pitch for him. Had a whiff rate 39% last year, and he can miss bats with the four seamer as well. One of the better bat missing four seamers in baseball last year. But obviously, as a starter, he'll have to go to his other pitches more, primarily that changeup. Z went four seam and sweeper combined 93.7%. But as a reliever, you can get away with that. So he's been throwing more pitches more frequently this spring, and results have been pretty damn good so far. And it looks like he's going to get a shot. Maybe doesn't give you the best ratios, but maybe he's more like a high 3 ERA guy, 1-2 plus whip. But I think those would be fine enough where you factor in the strikeout upside that he has. Where if he gives you 100 and then he's been 66 and 56 and 2/3 the last 2 years. Even if he's 130 to 140, and maybe he's pushing 170 to 180 Ks with those ratios, could be a top 50 pitcher easily this year. We'll see if he can stick, but even if not, he still provides value as a bullpen guy, especially in leagues where this value holds in some way. And Tanner Scott hasn't looked great this spring, so maybe if this doesn't work out, he can go back into a closer role. A lot of avenues for Puck to find success this season, and I'm starting to buy into him as a starter a little bit more. I still got my concerns, but they're giving him a shot, and obviously the talent is very high with Puck, so let's see how it goes. But yeah, I'm buying just in case he does blow up, blow up in a good way, and that value skyrockets. So I want to try to get at least a couple of shares of that before that potentially happens. And if not, again, so as a solid base to fall back on as one of the better relievers in baseball. So Puck is my fourth guy here.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hey, this name actually surprised me that I am picking him. And that's D.O. Hall, who I've been notoriously low on because it just really felt like he was going to be in the bullpen in Baltimore. Like they basically were going that route with him. But the trade to Milwaukee, it's changed everything a lot. He, I believe, is going to be a starter. And I think there's a chance that D.O. Hall could develop into a really solid starter, actually, with a little bit of command. there's certainly a lot of stuff here to, yeah, you look, and obviously we're not putting much stock at all in the spring training of four innings so far. He's, in my opinion, he's looked good from a standpoint of what he's doing. The fastball we already knew was a really good pitch, plus or better. Sits 95, 96, locates it well up in the zone. That's where he gets his whiffs, is when he's locating it up. That slider is a really solid pitch as well. Yeah, I think that when it's on, he can land it in the bottom quadrants of the zone, get strikes, but also he can get chase out of the zone. I think the changeup will be the biggest thing that I'm excited to see what and how it develops with Milwaukee. Milwaukee has a really solid pitching development going on. And I just really think that this is the case here where Hall has the potential to thrive with the Brewers. So D.L. Hall is still going really late in drafts, despite the trade. I don't remember exactly what day he was traded on. But if we filter the ADP, let's just even say, I think February 20th. I don't even remember when this deal went down. Maybe I should look. But from February 20th on, he's still going at pick 326, which is higher than it was. But I do see Hall sitting out there quite often. It's like, man, this guy, it's just a lot of upside. And I think at that point of a draft is where you chase upside. Like, you have, for the most part, your rotation set in. And then it's like, okay, we'll take the upside shots. If they don't work, then we can ultimately just drop them and churn that spot. But I just believe that Hall is going to get run as a starter. He has the stuff to thrive. And there's no reason, in my opinion, that you shouldn't at least try to take the shot at that cost. So I'm pretty intrigued. I think we put up a poll the other day about him versus Puck. It was pretty interesting, actually, to see the results. There was a lot of like people that were hard both ways. Oh, it's definitely Hall. It's definitely Puck.
I love that. Like, it was like two right in a row where it was like Puck, no question. The next one was Hall, no question. It's always funny doing those. Get people on total opposite ends of the spectrum.
Right. Yeah. Puck, not even close. Hall all day. yeah, it's just so interesting. I think it's actually a fair argument for both. Both have similar traits and need to show command. But yeah, at the end of the day, I think that, yeah, they're both fun arms to take shots on.
Absolutely. You and I have talked about both these guys at various points over the 3+ years we've been doing this podcast, because they both had similar career paths, both top prospects, both lefties, had elite stuff, had problems locating it and limiting walks, went to the from starter to the bullpen, now going maybe back to the rotation. Very similar career path, just Hall is a few couple years younger than Puck, probably two or so years younger. But yeah, why not at least see how it goes? And maybe they do have their values soar if it does work out and they become impact starters. Yeah, absolutely. All right, my second to last name here did have a little bit of an injury issue the other day, but he should be fine. That's Gavin Williams from the Cleveland Guardians. Someone that, and this is no shot to Tanner Bibee, who I like a decent amount as well, but there's no way that Gavin Williams should be going like 30, 40 picks or whatever it is behind Bibee in drafts. And I think long-term, I still would take Williams. I have him ranked higher than Bibee in my dynasty rankings. Both are good arms, but I think Williams has that next level of upside that Bibee just doesn't have. And you look at what Williams did last year. It was a fine rookie season. Nothing wrong with it. 3.29 ERA across 16 starts, 82 innings, right around the K per inning. It's a 23.5% strikeout rate. Did walk 10.7% of the batters he faced, but didn't give up a lot of barrels, 5.4%. That's better than league average by about a percent and a half. And I think that K rate is only going to go up. We saw a lot more strikeouts from him in the minor leagues, and he's not a 23.5% K rate guy. I mean, look at in his 175 and a third innings in the minor leagues, he had a 33.5% strikeout rates, 230 Ks in those 175 and a third innings. So I think he's going to be a guy that's more 27, 28, and maybe even 29% K rate guy. Walk rate did tick up a little bit. He was more in the 9% range in the minor leagues, and it did tick up over 10% last year. Probably is always in that 9-10% range, which is with his stuff is fine. I think long term he could be, I think he could settle in pretty close to like where Freddie Peralta is going now, like a back end, like a top 15 type starter, with the potential for a little bit more than that if that K rate does tick up to where I believe it can. The curveball and slider both can miss bats at a really solid clip. He's got a good four seamer as well. Curve and slider both had batting average against under 175. This past year, whiff rate above 30%. I think you see that both of those tick up closer to 40% or even above 40% this year. And I think you're going to see a nice breakout from Gavin Williams and potentially a top 25 annual starter as soon as next year. I'm taking the dip in value right now for whatever reason. The ADP should probably be 50 spots higher than it is. And I'm buying all day. I've already got a few shares of him this year. I've acquired him in one or two dynasty leagues this offseason. So yeah, I'm definitely trying to boost my share percentage, so to speak, with Gavin Williams right now, given how tame the value is right now.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I hope the injury is nothing serious.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
I'm a little concerned. Obviously, we're seeing guys go down like flies so far. And we need this to stop. I'd really like people to stay healthy. We can turn off the injuries for the rest of spring. But
that'd be nice.
Yeah. All right. Last guy for me, and it is Mackenzie Gore, who I think actually has made some tangible improvements to make me pretty interested. You look at this profile, and it's like, all right, this guy was a top pitching prospect in the game. Like him and Forrest Whitley were like the guys. And then obviously it all went to crap really quick. Last year, he did turn in his best season as a major leaguer, pitched 136 innings with Washington. He did have a 4.42 ERA, but there were some positives to take away. The home runs really bit him. But when Mackenzie Gore was locating the pitch as well, I thought he was exceptional. Really, it's all about the fastball location, in my opinion. Like, he's got to keep it located up when he's elevating the fastball. It's really good. But when he misses down or even middle, then there becomes issues. So ultimately, when I look at Gore, yeah, I think there is the upside and the chance that he could take that step forward as a starter. I think there were some questions about why he didn't make his most recent spring start. He actually went back and he stayed at camp and threw a simulated game with some of the major leaguers, if I'm not mistaken, rather than going on a road trip. But he hasn't made an official spring start since March 1st. So, you know, we're looking at 10 days at this point. But on March the 7th was that day that he did throw the simulated game. Yeah, I'm not all that worried about it. I think guys do that. I know Max Fried did it recently where he just didn't want to ride the bus. I don't know if that's exactly. Players don't want to go on those long road trips and ride the bus. So they stay back. They'll throw simulated games with some of the major leaguers in spring training. That happens early on. So I think that's what happened here. But ultimately, I think that Gore has the stuff and the potential to take that step forward if the four-seam location is good. We know the curveball is really good. The slider's really good. Oh, and the changeup's really good too. He didn't throw it much, but when he threw it, he got whiffs. The curve and slider both had whiff rates north of 37.5%, which is, you know, borderline like really good. And the changeup when he threw it had a 38% whiff rate. So, yeah, you look at Gore and you say, okay, it's all about the fastball, which allowed 17 homers, had a 279 batting average against, had a pretty high EV and hard hit rate, and he didn't miss bats with it. So, if the fastball is good and elevated, then I think Gore might be good to go. And I don't think the cost is very high on him either. This is the range where I'm shopping a lot of pitchers. So he goes like 275 to 300. So I'm pretty excited about that. I'm really intrigued to see what Gore can do.
Yeah, he's one where it's hard to fully quit Mackenzie Gore just because obviously he was the top pitching prospect for at least a year and a half, maybe even 2 years or so. And yeah, I think there's still some upside to be had there. I'm not quite as bullish on him, but I definitely think there's another level for him to unlock higher than what he has so far. And he's already missed some bats through all the inconsistencies so far. So yeah, I think there's still some more value to be had there. I'm going to end off with a Los Angeles Dodger with Emmett Sheehan, another guy that's going to probably start the year on the IL, but maybe that even helps keep his perceived value in check even more right now because I think there's a big time breakout coming this year, and hopefully he only misses maybe a starter to open the season. And yeah, that rotation is still pretty jam packed even after all the injuries. They have so many young names that they could throw in there as well. But Sheehan's a guy that was one of the best bat missers in the minor leagues over the last few years. If you look at pitching prospects with at least 100 and it was 150 innings combined over the last 3 years in the minor leagues, he had the second highest strikeout rate, only behind Ricky Tiedemann. He had a 40.6% K rate with an ERA of 2.95, FIP of 3.05, xFIP of 3.08 in those 3 years. And last year, a little bit of a higher ERA, 4.92 across 60 and a third innings, but only a 1.19 WHIP, 1.86 batting average against. Very nice to see there. That was in the 98th percentile, above average chase and whiff rates as well. You know, walk rate, 10.5%. I think he's similar to Gavin Williams, where he's probably always going to be in that 9 to 10% range. But with his bat missing abilities, I think this will be fine. Look at what he did last year. The overall K rate of 25.8%, still very solid. That's an above average K rate. But I think there's upside for more. And not just given what I just told you, what his minor league K rate was over the last 3 years. Look at his secondaries. You know, slider, changeup, and sweeper all had a whiff rate above 41%. The slider and changeup were his two most used secondaries, both in that 17 to 18% range. He went 60% fastballs last year. Maybe we see that tick back a little bit, work in the slider and change a little bit more. We'll see. But really good stuff here from Emmett Sheehan. Another guy, he has to do a little bit of a better job limiting hard contact and those walks, but the ingredients are there for him to make a big jump this year and maybe be an annual top 30, 35 pitcher or something like that. So like Sheehan a lot, and I'm trying to get him wherever I can. And hopefully that injury to him, just a minor speed bump when he's doing owning him a start or two, because I love the upside a lot here with Sheehan. But that's going to wrap us up here. That was six names from each of us, a dozen total pitchers that we're drafting this year as much as we can or targeting in Dynasty Leagues for one reason or another. So a lot of great targets for y'all to potentially go after in your Dynasty Leagues or Redraft Leagues as well. But that is going to wrap us up. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you check out DynastyDugout.com, ToolshedFantasy.com, and, of course, RotoBaller.com for more work from both of us. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.